Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Life and Leadership Gap Analysis Series. On this series, we'll be talking about closing the gap on what we know and what we actually do. We are exploring the principles in motion, getting back to the basics by visiting all the greats that we know and love, like Stephen Covey, Patrick Lencioni, just to name a couple. Our intention was to bring together inspired minds for meaningful discussions about the principles of life and of leadership, and to explore the gap between what we know and what we are living and leading in terms of these principles. Are you sharpening your saw, like Stephen Covey said? Are you practicing your swing? Are you moving through superficial harmony in your team, like Patrick Lencioni says? We are your hosts. I'm Charmaine Hammond, and my co-host is Christine LaPierre, and together we are working to inspire and develop healthy and well-developed teams. I've worked in correctional system, oil companies, nonprofits, and everything in between, and Christine has worked with everything from profit, from manufacturing vehicles, to growing consumer packaged goods, and our experience really, truly has covered all bases.
Great. So today, Scott Pelton is joining us. We've invited Scott to come on the show. Scott is actually the founder and chief performance officer of Tignum. In Tignum, they're specialists in sustainable high performance, and they help leaders and their critical teams to maximize their reach. Scott's also the author of Think, Float, or Swim, which is a book that I've read and I really enjoyed. I suggest it. So one of the things we asked Scott to come on and talk to us about one of the habits of highly effective people. And Scott, you said the one that you would really like to talk about was begin with the end in mind. So with that said, I'd love to know, why did that one stand out for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. We train our executives in four main areas: mindset, nutrition, movement, and recovery. And clearly, like, a big part of what we do with mindset is helping people improve their performance by having really clear intentions. And the whole idea of setting your intentions before you go into a meeting or a negotiation, whether it's a one-on-one, whether it's, you know, a really big business deal, is really having a clear picture of what is the end. And we try to help people think bigger than just the deal itself, but actually also some of the soft stuff, like, how do I want to see myself? How do I want to behave? How do I want people to feel? And so it was a perfect fit when I saw that.
I love your conversations about mindset. And I was actually presenting at a conference today, and we were talking about the importance of how your thoughts shape your communications, how you show up in workplace relationships. So thank you for reminding us about the importance of what's going through our mind and how we show up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's so funny because people often think that many of these strategies, probably the same thing happened with Stephen Covey when he wrote them, but they take a long time. But to sit down or in the process of even going into a meeting, to just stop your brain for a second and ask yourself, what are my intentions here? You know, what is it that I want to get out of this? It's amazing the way it aligns your posture. It aligns your energy. It aligns your energy or your listening style probably. And it aligns ultimately the way people feel about you, which is a huge part of creating those outcomes.
And Scott, just, you know, in your experience working with executives, what are executives doing when they're not setting a good intention? So give us an example of kind of what not to do in reference. I think this sounds so obvious to say, you know, we should start with the intentions, but I'm sure executives out there think that they're doing it. So tell us a little bit about what it doesn't look like.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we just wrote, a fantastic blog. It's compares amateurs versus professionals. And in athletics, it's easy to see the way an amateur approaches performance and the way a professional. Well, in business, we clearly have amateurs, even though they're highly paid and the repercussions of their performance, good or bad, is huge. And so a perfect example, I mean, I'll often get clients, hopefully just before they work with Tignum, not after, but they'll have 5, 6, up to 10 meetings a day, and they're running from meeting to meeting without any pause or thought about why they're even going to that meeting. And so I share the story, and I hear them also repeat it back in so many ways. They're in the third meeting physically, while their brain is in the first meeting mentally, and their stress system is already stressed about the fifth meeting, which is coming. And so much of that is because they're going from one to the next without any purposefulness. And what I like about starting with the end in mind and this idea of setting intentions is it forces you to create some purposefulness before you ask. And if you think about, I mean, in my opinion, this should be the new way of doing business, because not only are you more effective, but you're more efficient, so you save time. And time is what everyone's complaining that they don't have enough of.
Oh, what a brilliant comment. Oh, my goodness. I have clients that will be listening to that comment now, Scott, and they'll be talking about what you just said for a long time, because you struck a chord. I mean, people don't have enough time, and you're right. I think a lot of times we show up and we're in our minds. We're just moving from task to task, project to project, without really thinking it through. And I know from the work I used to do years ago in conflict resolution, we often saw that where people didn't look at the full picture. They didn't begin with their goal in mind or their end in mind, and it really made it tough for them to focus on the conversations and definitely impacted their ability to get the solutions and agreements that worked for everybody. So I think that's really important what you talked about, being purposeful and the fact that it's actually going to save us time and energy in the process.
Yeah, you know, I mean, your comment is a great one. What's really funny to me is we, you know, you've probably heard of the comment flow. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi has a book about the flow and talks a lot about this idea of getting into the flow where we have effortless high performance without much thought. We kind of call it, you know, having a clear and uncluttered mind. And you think about how much clutter is in our brain from all the things that we have to tackle, from the quick and frequent changing of tasks that we're doing, so the multitasking. And it is funny that when you set your intentions, when you have a clear picture of the end in mind, you can actually turn your mind off so that it can be clear and uncluttered, which means I can now go into a meeting. It sounds paradoxical, right? I have a picture of what it is I'm trying to create, and then I actually can forget it because my brain knows and go in and just be myself. And I tend to align my decision-making, my conversation style, the way I ask questions, all those things with this clear vision of what it is I want to create, rather than actually the opposite, which is without having that vision at the beginning, I have to think all the time, and it takes so much more mental energy.
So, Scott, on that note, when you get into working with executives on something like this, I know for myself, I've actually implemented a lot of meditation and some mindfulness training and actually creating presence in the moment, really, really understanding how to completely immerse myself in a moment. I've used that, I think, to create a shift in my own career from being focused on 72 different things, plus the BlackBerry, plus the text messages, plus the email, to really being in that, like you said, kind of effortless state of performance. I'll call it high performance if I were to brag. But I was going to say, when you're working with executives, do you agree that that's kind of how you try to get them there? Or, you know, do you have some other tips on how you help them create that?
Yeah, there's a ton of different ways to do it. And you're seeing also in the literature, even in Harvard Business Review, more and more talk about mindfulness. And what is mindfulness? It is exactly what you just described. It's being present and being focused, right? And so part of that can be taught and is practiced through meditation. We use a lot of different skills. One is we use a thing called the to-be vision, so people actually developing their own to-be vision. If they had all the energy, all of the mental agility, all the resilience, you know, all the executional stamina, those are kind of the things we work on in the world, who would they want to be? That's one to-be vision that gives them something to align themselves and focus on. And the way they create that is actually by setting their intentions in the morning. How do I see myself going through the day? And we use mental imagery. You might use meditation. Meditation is a great way to actually quiet the brain so that it's not so scattered, so then you can choose where you want to place your focus. We tend to use mental imagery because a lot of people may see meditation as it takes, first of all, a lot longer, and two, some people have a little more struggle with it because it is so esoteric and so soft sometimes, whereas mental imagery, people have seen athletes do it, and it's really easy for them to, okay, I imagine and see myself going through all the steps of what I want to do. So they're both great techniques, and they both balance the autonomic nervous system so that we're not always in our stress, fight, or flight response, which allows us to be in the moment.
Mm. That just really resonates, this to be vision. What a great example of, you know, really beginning with the end in mind. And the conversations about vision and strategic goals and the end in mind are so important now in workplaces. I'm finding a lot of our corporate clients and government and big industry are really helping their teams get back to what is our vision, what is our end goal, and what is our purpose. And a lot of our clients were saying that in this crazy time of a boom when workplaces were really busting at the seams, the vision kind of got by the wayside, and people were, the leaders that I talked to were saying that they really were just in such a performance mode to get the job done and, you know, meet deadlines that the vision got put aside. And so we had all these teams that really weren't essentially working with the end in mind. And I think now what they're describing is the ripple effect of challenges that they're left with, because they really had this incongruence between what they know they should be doing is having the end in mind, and what they were doing in practice was so different. There was a big gap.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I feel like, and dealing with our clients, I hear more and more, we're heading towards a cliff, and the cliff is somewhat that the physiology of the human body and brain was not built to work the way we're working right now. And people have to, it's like golf. You can't try to swing harder. I mean, everyone who's ever gone through learning golf tells you when it really clicks, it's when you learn to relax, to get your mind out of it, and to swing easier. And then all of a sudden your shots get straighter. You know, everything works better. And I think we're going to have to get there in the next few years in business, because the way we're working right now is just killing people and not producing the results we need.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, Scott, that I know what I'm seeing right now is even technology is really kind of taking a hold on most people that I'm working with. It's interesting. I just got off a call with some folks in middle management who were trying to do some work to help improve their performance, and it's interesting because they're just struggling with all the things that are being thrown at them, and it's very hard to even get a half hour where they're not being inundated with 19 kind of that high urgency, low important type of tasks. So that begin with an end in mind, I mean, there's just so little emphasis put on that with the way that we're putting all the firefighting and multitasking into the days of our executives and management teams.
Yeah, so just to give you a really practical example of the end in mind, what I always tell clients is, you know, the brain needs something to go towards. In the absence of having a clear vision of what it is you want, it creates chaos. And so when you ask people, well, why are you answering all these messages, or why are you multitasking so much, if you really peel back all the layers, the true answer to their question is because I have no idea what I would look like, what it would look like for me to do it differently. So they don't even have a vision of the end in mind of what they would look like to be calm, to be able to ignore distractions and focus on the task, what it would be like to actually refocus themselves, breathe different, you know. So that's part of exactly what we started the conversation with, the end in mind. If you can't create that image in your own brain, how do you expect your brain to create that when a crisis comes up? So they truly are like firefighters responding from call after call after call, but I can tell you, having been a firefighter for 25 years, you're not very effective running an operation that way. You know, even firefighters have to have a rehab recovery time to refill the air bottle, to cool off, to refuel ourselves, to do so many things. Because if firefighters were running from fire to fire to fire like today's executives are, we'd be burning down a lot of buildings and killing a lot of firemen.
Yeah, boy, what you're talking about is just such a big conversation. And I finished having a conversation with a couple of leaders about the importance of resilience. And what they're describing is what you're saying. People are not bouncing back, or let alone forward, after all the pace they've been keeping up and the tough decisions they've had to make.
And I get really excited when I see leaders who are making resilience and vision processes a priority, because I look at the teams and I see the difference in how the relationships are gelling amongst all the staff members, and how clearly cut the goals and the actions that they need to take to reach the goals. Everything just seems so much more crystallized. And I think it's easier for a team to get behind something that's clear for them. And if a vision isn't clear, and if the team is tired, mental fatigue, and they're not resilient, it is going to be next to impossible to launch big goals for a company or meet those big deadlines and project wins.
Yeah, and so, I mean, exactly to your point, now people have gotten to the point where the only vision they have of themselves and of the culture that they work in is this frantic culture. And so if you ask them, well, what would it look like, you know, what would the end in mind be to have, you know, my friend John Reed Doddick, who's the chief people officer of AOL, probably definitely one of the top two most brilliant chief HR officers I've ever met. That's his mantra. We have to change the culture from frantic to agile. And in order to do that, you have to change your own vision of it. We have to have a clear picture of what an agile workforce and an agile culture looks like. And you have to have a clear picture of how you operate within that and how you stop doing the things that just make everyone else frantic. And that's the problem, is most people are making everyone else frantic, you know?
Well, okay, so Scott, all of this sounds great in theory, but I'm gonna hold you a little to the mat. So tell us, how do companies, or how do, you know, somebody like the chief people officer of AOL, how do they actually do that? Again, it sounds great in theory, but give me some tactical ideas of how do you actually move from frantic to agile.
Well, you know, John is actually a really unique person. I mean, of course, I'm going to be a little biased coming from Tignum and being the fact that that's part of what we teach is sustainable high performance, and sustainability is a key word in that. You know, John is a person who gets up every morning and not only is hydrated and eats in a way to make his brain perform its best, but he's very conscious of why he's choosing the foods that he chooses. He makes sure to get some movement in so that his autonomic nervous system is balanced. You know, we call them daily prep movements, but during those movements he helps focus his brain. What are his intentions? What is the end in mind? When he walks into the office, how is his day going to look? How is he going to deal with a crisis, which he faces often in that role, as you can imagine? You know, he takes a power nap every day. The joke is at AOL, every day at 2 o'clock, he slides the curtain. He takes a 15-minute power nap. At first, people are thinking, what are you doing? He says, I don't care how busy you are. I can't fight fires all afternoon if I'm not 100% here. So I plug out or check out for 15 minutes, and people say, and he says, I'm 30% more effective all afternoon. So what people see, number one, from him, he has these strategies in mindset, nutrition, movement, recovery to do it. And number two, he doesn't just talk about it, he does it. And that's the problem with most leaders. You see it all the time. They're out there talking about being more mindful. They're talking about changing the way we work. But then guess what? They keep acting exactly the same because they've never stopped their own speed train to say, what would it look like if it were different? What would the end look like? And that's the problem. And that's why we're so persistent to work with our clients to make sure that they create this to-be vision and they start to recognize all the choices they have every day that either take them towards this new vision or towards their default future, which is being more frantic and eventually burning out or reaching some other crisis.
The example you shared was brilliant. I mean, it's totally what we're talking about, isn't it, Christine, in terms of this whole walking the talk and closing the gap between what we know and what we should be doing.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, it doesn't take more time. I mean, we do an exercise with our clients where we say, tomorrow you're going to have your craziest, busiest day. Now take everything you've learned from Tignum and apply it to that day. And so they as a group, you know, I'm going to get up, I'm going to drink my 2 glasses of water, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And they lay out their whole day from a mindset, nutrition, movement, and recovery perspective. And then I ask them, how much more time did that take? And then they start laughing. Maybe it took them 15 more minutes to be 15 to 30% more productive. Do the math, it's a pretty good trade-off.
I think that's amazing. When I think of my days in consulting, we used to work just around the clock. And the one thing that was so interesting is that we learned how to be frantic from watching everybody in the executive role be frantic. So I remember that there was a lot of initiatives to try to change the culture. And, you know, we have a, as humans, we have a monkey see, monkey do kind of a nature to us, though, where, you know, as much as we would try to get the team to operate more efficiently, we would be looking up to the leaders of the company and watching them kind of burn the candle at both ends. And a lot of us, I always felt, thought that that was what we needed to do to demonstrate that we were capable of being in leadership roles.
Yeah, I think even it's not even just monkey see, monkey do. It's kind of like it becomes your rite of passage, right? Hey, when I came up to the organization, this is what I had to do, so you should do it that way. And even though if you then ask them, was that effective, they'd say, oh, no, it was terrible. And you're like, okay, so skip the point of your badge of courage that you've already lived through it. Wouldn't you like to change it so that it's actually more effective? And maybe those people will be at 40 years old reaching the upper levels of management with a whole new tool bag to be effective. But it's funny, I mean, it's not human nature sometimes.
Wow, you know, something that's just jumping out for me, I love the example you shared about the mindset, nutrition, and movement, because so many of us, you know, we show up and we begin our day. I had this conversation with a leader today. She's a very busy person, has a huge caseload that she manages. She works in the family services industry for government, and she was saying, you know, I get to work a couple hours early so I can get a start on the day before anyone comes in. I start doing emails, and then through the conversation, she started to identify that 90% of what she's doing to get a jump start on the day and be productive was actually not giving her any value in the day. It was just crossing things off her to-do list that she could do at any other point. And so it was really interesting, this conversation about how do we manage our time and work with our energy. And I'm sure for this particular lady I'm speaking to, if we ever introduced the concept of having a 15-minute power break, I mean, they probably never considered that, but it would probably be the best thing that would happen for that team, because they're in the business of serving families, and they've got to have that tank refueled, and they've got to be in the game 100% at all times.
Yeah, and they won't change that until they, again, create their own to-be vision of what it would look like to do that, and then add the step that we often talk about, which are what would be the benefits of achieving your to-be vision. So it's not just starting with the end in mind, but actually, you know, looking at those benefits, because it's the benefits that drive behavioral change. But I often use a quote from Jack Nicklaus, you know, who was one of the greatest golfers ever, and he said, you know, I never hit a shot, not even in practice, without first having a very clear image of it in my mind. And he goes on and on with all the detail of the way he sees that, and I use that in front of my clients because we all use mental imagery from the sense that we're dreaming and we kind of vision things, but what he does is very structured. Step one is, what is the end in mind? Why am I doing this? What is it I'm trying to achieve? Then step two, three, and four is, how is that going to happen and what's it going to look like? And again, it goes right back to our conversation with you know, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, is starting in the end in mind is the most important place to start, because without it, you're all over the place before you ever get to your destination, which is a waste of time, which is inefficient.
Definitely. And it's interesting. I'm just curious, do you think, I know, Scott, you and I have talked about this a little bit, I immediately start thinking of purpose. You know, when I think of purpose, I think of, dare I say the word spiritual, but kind of what is the bigger reason why we're here, you know, that kind of feeling. When I'm actually trying to think of begin with the end in mind, and when I think of, if you understand why you're here as far as trying to serve other people or serve an organization and helping people, I guess it could be a real powerful reason to get up and get motivated. Do you kind of see that happening in leaders, even if they don't call it something, let's say, so esoteric, like you said, or something so soft?
Well, if I could read, you know, which I can't, but if I could read to you some of the to-be visions, they're amazing. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
The purpose, one of the reasons for the to-be vision is to create purpose, passion, passion and meaning, you know, because they often go through what we call the dip. You know, whenever you're trying to be better, you get excited, you get started, you make some changes, and you go through a dip. And the dip can either destroy your change process and also just destroy your morale, because then you say to yourself, you know, here we go again, I was excited, I failed. But one of the things that pushes you through that dip with even more momentum to overcome it, which means that you're even more prepared for the next dip, is actually this to-be vision, which is, why do I want, you know, and that's the benefits also, why do I want to achieve this, and where does this give me value, you know what I mean? And when they frame it around as a leader, as a husband or a wife, as a parent, as a friend, as a brother, as a sister, then they're really looking at it from all angles, then they really realize this isn't just about work. And I think, coming back to your point, that's super important.
Totally. And I appreciate you connecting it back to value, because a lot of the leaders I work with, it always comes down to some kind of a bottom line for you. And so what you've done is pulled together these critically important components and still connected the value or the wins for the company. But what I'm getting from this conversation, Scott, is really that this is not just something we do in the workplace. The real value comes when we have our to-be vision personally, too. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. I mean, you know what's funny? If you look at AOL, AOL hired us because they have a talent drain problem. They lose, I mean, ridiculous, like 40% of their top talent every 18 months. Now, granted, they're in a field where, you know, the Googles, the Yahoo, I mean, they're stealing people from each other all the time. But that cost them $35 million. So they invest in a company like Castignum to come help people create a to-be vision, you know, I'm going to simplify it, and improve their sustainable high performance. And why do they do that? People now feel better about themselves. They feel better about AOL for having invested in them that way. And they're better people, which in the end saves AOL $30 million. So, I mean, it's, you know, it comes back to, it's a win-win for everyone, but not in the way that you normally would measure, you know, how many widgets did you produce, which is, I think, a new way of thinking.
And you know what, Scott, I think this is such a cool conversation, because at the end of the day, I think Charmaine and I wanted to visit these concepts because it is the soft stuff. I'm going to kind of put it in the camp of soft stuff, but it is the soft stuff that actually matters. And I think both of us know that we can talk to people in companies and leaders and managers all day long about creating results and metrics and things along that line, but the principles that Franklin Covey talked about, or Stephen Covey talked about, along with the five agreements, like they've never been more important than they are right now in trying to really grow businesses and improve performance. So anyway, I think this is such a great conversation, and I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to wrap us up. But real quick before we go, Scott, if you have kind of one takeaway or one action item that you'd like our audience to walk away with, what would be your thought?
You know, I would tell people, create your own to-be vision, which is, who do you want to be? How do you want to be seen? How do you want people to feel when they're around you? Every day in the morning, ask yourself, what are two things I can do to move closer to that? And every night at the end of the day, before you go to bed, ask yourself, what two things did I do today to help create that? Or what were the two things I did to not create that? And what you'll find is you will make changes without any resistance and without even thinking about it.
That's great. And Charmaine, do you have any thoughts on this that you'd like people to take away?
I have loads, but I'll give you one. I really like Scott's comments about the example about mindset, nutrition, and movement. And I'm really looking forward to having these conversations with my clients about what are they doing on a practical level every day to have that mindset and to make sure that their actions, that they really are walking the talk and that they have congruence around all of the steps needed to walk the talk, have a mindset, nutrition, and movement.
I think that's great, and I think my takeaway from this was that really creating that presence and that state of mind where there is some quiet is kind of the foundation for, you know, it's kind of the state that you need to be in order to create, begin with the end in mind. I loved the fact that Scott gave the idea of using mental imagery as a way to create that space to visualize where you're headed. Like I said, meditation works for me, but I think that the mental imagery, I could really see that working for a large audience of people without having to attend the meditation hall. So I think that was a great recommendation on his part. So with that, thank you all for listening, and thank you, Scott and Charmaine, both for this conversation. It was fantastic. Have a very good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.